Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, January 23rd, 2026. We'll begin today's reading with the front page with an article titled CU Development Property Puzzle. It's unclear what buyer of Canopy Club Timponi's parcels plans for sites. Story by Jana Wiersema out of Urbana. 1 month after the closure of Timponi's Ristorante, questions remain about what's next for the property, which recently passed into new hands, as did a neighboring parcel that is currently home to a local nightclub. Property records show that the Raymond M. Timponi Trust sold the former restaurant at 710 South Goodwin Avenue to Hartman Properties LLC on December 18, 2025, in a $3 million multi-parcel sale that also included 708 South Goodwin Avenue, currently home to the Canopy Club. Business records indicate that the LLC is associated with JSM's family of companies, which include real estate investment firm Hartman Capital, JSM Living, JSM Commercial, and JSM Development Services. The News Gazette reached out to Hartman Capital and JSM for comment, but had yet to receive a response by the time of writing. Leadership at the Canopy Club indicated that the business would provide a statement, but has yet to do so. The parcel where the Canopy Club is located is also home to 710 Mart, just north of the former Timponi's, and Manolo's Pizzas and Empanadas, which is located along Oregon Street, south of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. I haven't had a chance to sit down with JSM to talk about what their plan is, said Chul Kim with 710 Mart. He added that his lease currently runs through September 2027. Three other parcels in the same block were purchased by another LLC associated with Hartman Capital and JSM on December 19, 2025, in a $3.93 million multi-parcel sale. The three properties, 1107 West Oregon Street, 1105 West Oregon Street, and 1108 West Nevada Street, are currently home to apartments included in JSM Living's building list. The next front page feature is Episode 11, As Heard On, airing from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday on WDWS 1400 AM and streaming online at news-gazette.com. 4 days after belting out the national anthem heard around cyberspace, Jim Cornelissen had finally made it through all of the social media shoutouts he received in the aftermath of last Sunday night's Bears-Rams playoff game at Soldier Field. When I got home that night, I had 248 text messages, and I was like, what the heck? Chicago's famed dramatic tenor said Thursday on News Gazette Radio, and the next day I got onto Twitter, or X, and oh my god, all day long. I didn't come up for air from Twitter until Wednesday. Just unbelievable response I've gotten. I've gotten a lot of job inquiries, interview requests. You guys down there in Champaign, I did this morning in Miami, Florida. During a singing career that's taken him to venues ranging from the UI Ice Arena, where he performed the anthem before multiple Goat Isle Cup fundraisers, to the Brickyard, where he opens the Indy 500 with Back Home in Indiana, Cornelissen has never experienced anything quite like Sunday sold-out Soldier Field national television audience on NBC unprecedented pregame hype. To see the videos later and see the players singing along, he said, I just can't tell you how special the whole thing was. She's the 13th all-time leading scorer in Illini women's basketball history. He's a top reserve for the 11th-ranked Illinois men. On Thursday, the former Adalia McKenzie shared the story of the touching moment that led to her becoming Adalia Humrichus, wife of Ben, last month. I was at a pizza place with this family that I stayed with for some time. They go to the church I go to. They took me out to dinner, and next thing you know, I see someone walking in and giving me flowers and then this note, and I was like, uh-oh. I read the note, and it said all these sweet things. It was from Ben. It said, come to the back room. I got up, went to the back room, and there were rose petals leading up to where he was. He gave me this sweet speech. I could not tell you what he said. All I know is he got on his left knee and he asked me to be his wife. He got an immediate yes, followed by a lot of tears, she said, and there was a whole back room full of all our family and friends. As a 28-year-old Cub, Fergie Jenkins went the distance 30 times during his Cy Young season of 1971. That's one more complete game than every pitcher combined to throw last year. I think they're protected too much, the Hall of Famer said 2 days before he speaks at the Illini Baseball Program's annual Hot Stove Banquet. You see a lot of these young men going 4 and 5 innings and not understanding they could do it longer if they were given the opportunity. I just think that the organization, the agents, whoever's stopping them from continuing to pitch into the 6th, 7th, and 8th inning, it's something that should be changed, and I think it's going to change in the near future. Click on the podcast at news-gazette.com for much more from a lineup that included retail expert Nathan Yang from the UI's Geis College of Business. That was by Jeff Delisio. Moving now to national news. Weather forecast. Cold punch coming. Huge winter storm expected to bring crippling snow, sleet, and ice to 2/3 of country. Out of Atlanta in the AP. Bread was flying off the shelves, salt was being loaded into trucks, and utility workers were nervously watching forecasts Thursday as a huge winter storm that could bring catastrophic damage, widespread power outages, and bitterly cold weather was barreling toward the eastern 2/3 of the U.S. The massive storm system is expected to bring a crippling ice storm from Texas through parts of the South, potentially around 1 foot of snow from Oklahoma through Washington, D.C., New York and Boston, and then a final punch of bitterly cold air that could drop wind chills to minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit in parts of Minnesota and North Dakota. Forecasters are warning that the damage, especially in areas that get a large amount of ice, could rival a hurricane. About 160 million people were under winter storm or cold weather watches or warnings, and in many places both. When will it start? The storm was expected to begin today in New Mexico and Texas, and then the worst of the weather will move east into the deep south before heading up the coast and thumping New England with snow. Cold air streaming down from Canada caused the Chicago Public Schools and Des Moines, Iowa Public Schools to cancel today's classes. Wind chills predicted to be as low as minus 35 degrees Fahrenheit could cause frostbite within 10 minutes, making it too dangerous to walk to school or wait for the bus. The cold punch coming after means it will take a while to thaw out, an especially dangerous prospect in places where ice and snow weighs down tree branches and power lines and cuts electricity, perhaps for days. Roads and sidewalks could remain icy well into next week. Freezing temperatures are expected all the way to Florida, and lows in the north and Midwest will get about as cold as possible, even down to minus 25 or 30 degrees Fahrenheit, forecasters said. A severe cold snap 5 years ago took down much of the power grid in Texas, leaving millions without power for days and resulting in hundreds of deaths. Governor Greg Abbott said Thursday that won't happen again. The power system has never been stronger, never been more prepared, and is fully capable of handling this winter storm, he said. There is no expectation whatsoever that there is going to be any loss of power from the power grid. Forecast difficulty. Winter storms can be notoriously tricky to forecast. 1 or 2 degrees can mean the difference between a catastrophe or a cold rain. And forecasters said the places with the worst weather can't be pinned down until the event starts. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp declared a state of emergency in his state, like many other governors, while acknowledging Thursday morning some forecasts have disastrous levels of wintry weather in Atlanta, while others have the Deep South's largest city mostly spared. Ahead of the storm, Atlanta resident Jennifer Girard bought some blankets and batteries Thursday on a Walmart shopping trip in nearby Chambly with her 21-month-old baby. Canned food, batteries, and water were among the most popular items, leaving shelves less stocked than usual. I used to live in Florida. We used to do that all the time for hurricane season, so it's not so different, she said. As a precaution, North Carolina's largest public school system was preparing for potentially several days out of physical classrooms next week. The Wake County School System, with 161,000 students in and around Raleigh, told its nearly 11,000 teachers to create 3 days of assignments accessible online or through paper copies. Brine trucks were already treating roads from Oklahoma to Tennessee, with more states expected to begin treating roads as the start of the storm gets closer. Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger told her residents to prepare for days without power or the ability to get out of their neighborhoods. And in a nod to the politics of the time, the newly inaugurated Democrat said people should not be scared to call 911 in an emergency just because of the immigration crackdowns going on in places like Minnesota. If someone needs to call police, having a health emergency needs to call first responders, please do so and ensure the safety of your friends, neighbors, and family. And stay warm, Spanberger said. College sports teams moved up or postponed games, and the Texas Rangers canceled their annual Fan Fest event. The city of Carmel, Indiana, canceled its winter games out of fear residents could get frostbite and hypothermia competing in ice trike relay and human curling, in which people slide down a skating rink and inner tubes. But the Nashville Symphony said Thursday its weekend performances of Frozen were still going on as expected. And in Charleston, West Virginia, organizers said the annual West Virginia Hunting and Fishing Show will go on after more than 150 exhibitors signed up for the sold-out event that is expected to draw about 12,000 people today through Sunday. The forecast calls for rain, freezing rain, and snow, but with outfitters coming from all over the U.S. as well as Canada and South Africa, the show must go on, said Glenn Jarrell, a spokesperson for the West Virginia Trophy Hunters Association, the event's promoter. We're not thinking about stopping. We don't care if it's rain, snow, or high water, Jarrell said. Moving over to the U.S. Congress, House approves final batch of yearly spending bills. Senate must pass measures by January 30th to avoid shutdown. Out of Washington in the AP. The House passed this year's final batch of spending bills on Thursday as lawmakers, still smarting from last fall's record 43-day shutdown, worked to avoid another funding lapse for a broad swath of the federal government. The four bills total about $1.2 trillion in spending and now move to the Senate, with final passage needed next week before a January 30 deadline to avoid a partial government shutdown. Three of the bills had broad bipartisan support. They funded defense and various other departments, including education, transportation, and health and human services. A fourth bill funding the Department of Homeland Security was hotly disputed as Democrats voiced concerns that it failed to restrain President Donald Trump's mass deportation efforts. Republicans were able to overcome the Democratic objections and muscle the Homeland Security bill to passage in a 220-207 vote. The broader package, which funds a 3.8% pay raise for the military, passed in a 341-88 vote. Before the votes, House Democratic leaders announced their opposition to the Homeland Security bill as the party's rank and file demanded a more forceful stand in response to the Republican president's immigration crackdown. Trump's efforts have recently centered in the Minneapolis area, where more than 2,000 officers are stationed and where a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer fatally shot Renee Good, a mother of three. In a joint statement, the Democratic leaders said Trump promised the American people that his deportation policy would focus on violent felons in the country illegally, but instead, ICE has targeted American citizens and law-abiding immigrant families. Taxpayer dollars are being misused to brutalize U.S. citizens, including the tragic killing of Renee Nicole Good. This extremism must end, said the statement from Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democratic whip Catherine Clark, and Democratic caucus chair Pete Aguilar. Democrats had few good options to express their opposition to Homeland Security funding. Lawmakers, when confronting a funding impasse, generally turn to continuing resolutions to temporarily fund agencies at their current levels. But doing so in this case would simply cede more Homeland Security spending decisions to Trump, said Representative Rosa DeLauro, top Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee. Also, there was concern that a failure to fund Homeland Security would hurt disaster assistance programs and agencies such as the Transportation Security Administration, while ICE and Customs and Border Protection would simply carry on. They could use funding from Trump's big tax cut and immigration bill to continue their operations. ICE, which typically receives about $10 billion a year, was provided $30 billion for operations and $45 billion for detention facilities through Republicans' One Big Beautiful Bill. This year's Homeland Security bill holds the annual spending that Congress provides ICE roughly flat from the prior year. It also restricts the ability of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem to unilaterally shift funding and allocate federal dollars as she sees fit. The bill also allocates $20 million for the purchase and operations of body cameras for ICE and CBP officers interacting with the public during immigration enforcement operations. And it will require Homeland Security to provide monthly updates on how it plans to spend money from Trump's bill. It's not everything we wanted. We wanted more oversight. But look, Democrats don't control the House. We don't control the Senate or the White House, but we are able to add some oversight over Homeland, said Representative Henry Cuellar, Democrat of Texas, a member of the Appropriations Panel. Moving now to the Our Communities, fiscal year 2026 spending. State to withhold nearly $500 million, citing federal uncertainty. Fall executive order required most agencies to identify ways to reserve funds. Story by Ben Selinsky out of Capital News, Illinois. In Springfield, Governor J.B. Pritzker's office plans to hold back nearly $500 million in spending for the current fiscal year as the state faces constant uncertainty over the economy and federal funding. The reserves make up less than 1% of the state's budget and largely focus on cost savings such as foregoing hiring in certain agencies for the rest of the fiscal year, which ends June 30th. Pritzker had directed agencies to identify immediate spending reductions, including efficiencies that will result in reduced spending, in a September executive order. Alexis Sturm, Pritzker's budget director, said in a memo to the state's agency directors that the reserves aim to provide cushion for challenging budget years ahead. We expect that most agencies will not see their funding requests fulfilled, and continued fiscal management in fiscal year 2026 will help ensure the ability of the state agencies to face the challenges expected over the next few years, Sturm said in a letter. Prioritizing and limiting hiring and other operational expenditures will be key. In total, the reserves target $482 million in fiscal year 2026. While Pritzker's September order directed the agencies to identify ways to reserve 4% of fiscal year 2026 general fund appropriations, those announced Thursday amounted to less than 1% of the $55.1 billion budget. A senior administration official told Capital News, Illinois, the 4% goal was designed to be a target for agencies rather than a mandate. The official stressed that the agencies cannot cut spending as the funds are appropriated by the legislature, but agencies can keep funds in reserve. The executive order was specifically in response to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, officially known as H.R. 1, that President Donald Trump signed last July. The law made significant changes to tax policies, health care coverage, and how much funding states will receive from the federal government for social service programs. Pritzker's budget office estimated in October the law will ultimately cost Illinois billions in the coming years. What's changing? Most of the reserves were earmarked for health care and human services. The Department of Health Care and Family Services will forego transferring $200 million to the Health Care Provider Relief Fund because the fund will have enough money to make it through the fiscal year without the additional money, the official said. Pritzker's administration also does not plan to release $29.5 million in funding for higher education that was already reserved in the budget. The budget called for increasing spending for higher education by 1% while giving the governor authority to release an additional 2% should the state's financial picture become less cloudy. Advocates have called on the governor to release that funding, citing financial issues some state universities are facing. Sturm's memo noted another $10.3 million in reserves through grant reductions and other measures at the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, as well as environment and cultural agencies like the Department of Agriculture and the Illinois Arts Council. The state will also reduce operational expenses by limiting overtime and travel expenses and leaving vacancies unfilled at certain agencies. Another $50 million would come from group health insurance savings. Major spending areas such as K-12 education and pensions were not subject to the September executive order or the recently announced reserves. State of Finances. Pritzker is set to deliver his budget address on February 18th, and the senior administration official said lawmakers should not be surprised to hear a conservative approach to budgeting and an emphasis on tough choices. In October, Pritzker's budget office projected a $2.2 billion deficit for the upcoming fiscal year 2027. Sturm said the financial outlook has not changed significantly since last fall. A report published in early January by the legislature's Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability found state revenue is up nearly 5%, or $1.2 billion, through the first 6 months of fiscal year 26 compared to the same period in fiscal year 25. Sales tax revenue was up 1%, an indicator of consumer confidence in the economy. The official told Capital News Illinois people would not read COGFA's report as a sign the state is out of the woods because the budget was crafted with a conservative revenue estimate. The official said Pritzker's administration expects the financial situation could worsen, particularly as parts of H.R. 1 take effect and the economy remains volatile. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. And we will move over to our communities. Operation Midway Blitz, lawsuit over use of force by immigration agents dismissed. Story by Jason Meissner of the Chicago Tribune, TNS. A federal judge in Chicago on Thursday officially dismissed a lawsuit that led to her landmark injunction limiting the use of force by immigration agents during Operation Midway Blitz. Though U.S. District Judge Sarah Ellis agreed to dismiss the case without prejudice, which leaves open the possibility that the claims could be reinstated, it marked an anticlimactic end to a case that made national headlines as one of the first to challenge the tactics of immigration officials on the ground. Ellis's granting of the plaintiff's request to drop the case was largely a foregone conclusion. The judge did, however, press the pause button on making a decision after the fatal shooting of a U.S. citizen in Minneapolis on January 7th. Ellis told the parties at that time she still had concerns over her obligation to protect the class of journalists, clergy, and other protesters certified in the lawsuit, noting, "If I dismiss this case, the preliminary injunction ceases to exist." On Thursday, in addition to dismissing the suit, Ellis also decertified the class. The case, brought by the Chicago Headline Club and other media groups, led to a sweeping preliminary injunction by Ellis in November, limiting the use of tear gas and other chemical munitions against members of the media and protesters, and also requiring agents to wear body cameras and clear identification. And we'll turn also, I guess, to the crime report. Each week, News Gazette Courts reporter Luke Taylor will assemble a bulletin of recent criminal activity reported by area police agencies. In Champaign, in the 800 block of West Hill Street, a man was robbed at gunpoint while attempting to purchase an item off Facebook Marketplace at 6:06 p.m. January 14th. In the 1000 block of Holiday Drive, a woman was arrested for refusing to allow her 16-year-old into their house at 6:04 p.m. January 16th. and the 1000 block of South Mattis Avenue, two juveniles were detained temporarily for allegedly looking through vehicles at 10:57 p.m. on January 16th. In the 0 to 100 block of East University Avenue, an offender battered a security guard at a bus station and was arrested at 6:35 a.m. Sunday. Bradley Avenue and McKinley Avenue, a suspect passed counterfeit bills at a store at 7:30 p.m. Sunday. In the 1000 block of South Mattis Avenue, a suspect attempted to rob victims and was battered at 4:11 p.m. Monday, Washington Avenue and Ash Street, during a traffic stop, a driver was arrested for possession of narcotics at 2:29 a.m. Tuesday. In Urbana, in the 600 block of West Green Street, an unknown offender broke into a vehicle and attempted to steal it at 5:50 a.m. Saturday. In the 1000 block of High Cross Road, a man attempted to steal items from a business, provided false information to officers, and was discovered to have valid warrants out of Indiana and Alabama at 9:30 p.m. Sunday. In the 1400 block of Eads Street, unknown offenders discharged a firearm toward a victim who was walking down a public street. Firearms were also discharged towards a school in session and an apartment complex, causing damage to both at 9:45 a.m. Tuesday. In the 1300 block of North Lincoln Avenue, two unknown offenders entered two victims' unlocked vehicles without permission and rummaged through them at 3 p.m. Tuesday. In the 2500 block of Philo Road, a man with multiple prior theft convictions attempted to steal items from a store but was stopped by asset protection employees at 4:40 p.m. Tuesday. In North McCullough Street and West Park Street, an unknown offender stole a vehicle at 7 p.m. Tuesday. Looking now at Champaign County building permits. Listed are permits for all new single-family and multifamily residences, as well as commercial and industrial work for residential remodeling costing $25,000 or more. Permits are listed by applicant, description, site, and cost. Out of Champaign, Tron Solar LLC, rooftop solar at 2801 Alton Drive, $41,700. Original Brothers, bathroom remodel at 1109 Harrington Drive, $27,100. Dan Ruber, interior renovations at 705 South State Street, $41,000. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Friday, January 23rd, 2026. Please stay tuned.